This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts, and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi everyone, please welcome with me Dr. Mark Schaefer from Germany. Mark has been traveling quite a bit when he was younger and is also the leader of the National Reference Laboratory of Bee Disease in Germany. And his current role is also taking him to all sorts of countries around the world because bee health is an issue that matters to all of us. And it's like a topic we should all be involved in some way. So thank you so much for making some time to talk to me today. And actually, funny bit is that I was working with you for 7 years before I moved to New Zealand. And now it's super awesome that we are still in touch and we can talk about such interesting topics and you can share your knowledge. So welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about how you started traveling when you were younger and how your journey of becoming a scientist went?
Yeah, starting traveling, it's quite some time ago. So I think I was around 20 when I traveled first time. And it was because some of my friends had been to Thailand and Indonesia and showed me pictures and told a lot of nice stories. And so, yeah, after I did my civil work instead of doing military, so we could do civil work in Germany, and it was about 15 months. And in the end, you actually got some money from the state somehow. And so in the end, I decided that I'm really directly after the civil work that I want to travel. And a friend of mine, he also was keen traveling. So we both made plans together and we flew to Thailand. And so this was my first destination. I had been to Thailand and I spent about, I think, 1.5 months with my friend. And then I left him because he anyway had to go home earlier. And then I was traveling through Thailand and then also through through Malaysia to Indonesia, Sumatra. Yeah, and this was my first travel experience. Was, I think, 6 months.
Cool.
And then I was kind of addicted to Asia. So I did this more times again, but it was always Thailand, Malaysia, and Sumatra in the beginning. And in between, because I was an electrician, and between I was then always working as an electrician just for another friend who had something like a company. So I worked for him. Also traveling in Germany, actually, like many different cities where we had like buildings going on. And then I was traveling and traveling again. And I thought about what to do with my life because like electrician was not the thing I wanted to do for my whole life. So somehow it happened that someone told me that I can do high school in my home city, actually. And it was a 3-year school. And after I had like high school, like anybody that did it from the beginning on like this. Yeah. And then I was able to study. And in my head, I had like 2 options, like biology or geography, because I planned to combine this with traveling.
Nice.
And then I just thought, okay, I start with biology, and I took it easy. I thought, okay, I'm not sure if I'm the right person for studying and everything, but I will just try, and it worked out fine. So I became a biologist, and in the end of this, yeah, you have to do your final work, and there it happened by accident that I ended up with the bees actually. So before there was like other things, other plants, like there was something which I actually was signing in for, was a botanical work. But just before it started, I met a colleague who said that this might not be the right thing because she knew the supervisor already, which I didn't really know well. And then other things in my life happened. So I thought, okay, I decided that I changed this. And by accident, I found a very nice work, like to do my pre-diploma in South Africa, working with honeybees. And yeah, so I ended up in South Africa and I started to work with honeybees. And there I met a lot of people that are working with honeybees already. And so step by step, I became what I am now.
Yeah. That's awesome. So would you say that traveling actually brought you and inspired you to do what you do now, with like being interested in biology and geography, to be able to combine it with traveling in the future?
I think actually that my interest in geography, like, or in other countries in the world, in other cultures, that really grew with traveling. But the biology background, I think it was somehow there that I was interested in animals and plants and life in general already. And so that it seems like that it all should be like this. But it really just happened by accident. Yeah, but right. I'm very happy in my position now.
Yeah. I can tell, like, I could feel when I was working with you that there was a lot of passion behind it, and also just the topic itself. Like, I started becoming really passionate about bees. I still miss working with bees, to be honest. I think they are super cute, and just the importance of them. It's such a good thing to highlight how important they are for the ecosystem, for the food security, and just in general. A lot of people know bees are important, but they don't quite understand how important they are. What are the current biggest challenges in bee health globally, but also specifically for Germany?
Yeah, bee health. I mean, bee health is a big thing. So we are our lab is only working with the honeybee. But there are lots of other bee species on the world. And so both are in danger. And the biggest problem, I think, is that the human population is growing so much and taking up so much space that there is not much space left in many places in the earth. Of course, luckily there are still some places where man has not taken over yet. But they are really getting smaller and smaller. And I think this is really the biggest problem, that the habitat for all those animals are getting smaller and smaller, and many times too small for them to really survive. So they go extinct in some places. And the honeybee itself, which is our topic, is lucky that it's actually a domestic animal. So it's kept by beekeepers. And they have to care for their health, actually. So, and beekeeping also changed a lot in the last decades, I would say. So the biggest problem for the honeybee in the moment worldwide is actually the varroa mite. It's a small mite that sucks blood and fat of the body of the bee. And it's also opening the transmission for different pathogens between the bee and the mite. And so viruses are a very big thing. So there is one virus called a deformed wing virus, which is actually causing colony losses in many, many places in the world. And yeah, so viruses are, I think, the biggest problem in the moment.
Yeah. And is the varroa mite now to find everywhere in the world, or is there any place where it hasn't taken over yet?
So it's actually nearly everywhere where you have honeybees, you can find the varroa mite now. Since 3 years, it's also in Australia. So Australia was for the longest time free of varroa, but wow. In New South Wales, they came in and they tried in the beginning to eradicate, but it's impossible. And now they try to manage it, to keep it in New South Wales. They try to suppress the spread, but they cannot eradicate it anymore. And there are some places in the world which are like forests or islands that are free, still free. And they are also a big subject for science. So there's a lot of studies going on to see how can those bees handle varroa mites without problems. Or so they're not like kind of free, but they are resistant. Like some of the places are really still free, but there are some places where the bees, they are able to live with the mite without medication.
Wow, that's super interesting. Do you have any of those places in mind, or is that just
There's like there's a forest in the US, I forget the name, and there's Åland islands in Finland, which are actually totally free for the moment. But then there's a Gotland island in Sweden, some islands in Portugal, and yeah, there's different locations. And for example, a big area where they have varroa mite, but they don't treat against it, is actually in Africa and in South America, because in South America, mostly they have Africanized bees already. And those seem to be able to handle varroa without treatment. But in some of those places, the beekeepers treat, of course. Yeah.
For people who don't know about it, how do you treat it? And also, there's not really any kind of way to really get rid of it. As you said, you can't get rid of the varroa mite. It's there. It won't leave anymore. But is there any promising research on maybe really killing them properly, or like having them stay away from the bee properly, especially working with those resistant ones that don't really get impacted as much? Because before, it's just like certain acids that you can spray on, right? Or like certain other methods, but it will only do so much. It's not really a proper method to keep it away.
Yeah, it's the problem is that you cannot kill it 100% with all those medications. Like there's medications from companies all over the world, and actually the mite became resistant to some of those medications already. So if you use the same medication on and on, it's easily that they become resistant to it and it doesn't work anymore. And like those acids you were talking about, the bees cannot really become resistant against it. And I mean, the mites cannot really become resistant against it, but those methods are still not 100%. So you still always have some mites surviving. And then there are also hidden bee colonies, maybe. Some beekeepers, they don't treat. And then those bees, they can transmit the mite to colonies which were treated. So there's always a big exchange between colonies in an area going on because some bees are flying to other colonies maybe to rob them because there is no honey flow anymore in the area. And then they find a weak colony that is not able to defend themselves against another colony. So they rob the honey of this colony, but then they bring back with them the mite and probably also other pathogens. And one promising thing is the breeding of the honeybee to become more able to live with the varroa mite. But there's the same problem that you have a lot of honeybees in the area. So if you are using a good queen that is able to produce a colony that is able to live with the varroa mite without treatment, for example, then it could happen that they are also flying out and producing new queens, means reproducing the colony, but then they mate with drones from other colonies have not those genes, and so it's mixed up already again. So it's really not easy to even if you have a good breed that is resistant, it's not easy to keep this resistance because of the nature of the bee, that it's flying everywhere, and because of the other beekeepers that are maybe not so strict.
Yeah, I guess that's, as you said, the nature of the bees. You can't contain them and you can't tell them what to do and what not to do. You can only let them fly out. You can only care for them if they are deciding to stay with you as a beekeeper. But there's also not really any guarantee that your bee colony will stay where you have your hives, right? They can anytime just fly out and not come back.
Yeah. I mean, you can try. I mean, this is what is every beekeeper in Germany, at least, is trying to do to stop them from swarming. So stop them from reproducing, because like when they reproduce, I mean, it's a good thing. But if you cannot stop it, you will lose half of your colony because they will look for another place somewhere. So beekeepers are actually trying to keep this, and they are reproducing themselves. So they are actually splitting colonies, making two colonies out of one, trying not to lose half of them. And a very important thing to have, like a good breed, like a good queen, is that we have like areas that are kind of isolated. So actually we have an island which is not so far away from us. It's called the Greifswalder Eule, and there is actually a station where beekeepers can go to send their queens to be mated with drones that are a good breed, so that are, for example, resistant or something. And this is organized by beekeepers that are taking the place for, let's say, 2 months or something. And then afterwards, everything is gone again from the island, so there are no bees anymore. And then maybe another organization of beekeepers is coming with other drones for another mate of another breed.
Yeah, that's super interesting. It reminds me a bit on like we do here in my current company. It's like artificial breeding for bull, like bulls are giving their semen for cows to have heat resistant or coal resistant or less CO2, like all sorts of different things to breed the perfect cow. So it's a little bit like that.
It's very similar, actually, because it's also, we also have artificial insemination of honeybee queens, for example. So you can usually, a queen, when she's flying out to mate, like a virgin queen, she's mating with 10 to 15 or even more drones. So it's a mixture of different father genes that are coming in, and then it's not so easy to control. But with artificial insemination, you can choose the semen you allow to reproduce with the queen. So that's very similar. But the other thing is like that your cows, they are at this a place and you can keep them there and you can secure that they're not flying out. And this is not possible with the bees.
Yeah, exactly. It's so interesting. Eh? I'm pretty sure that no one really knew that artificial insemination of bees is actually possible. So that's already a pretty cool topic. But I wanted to come back to the topic of the medication that is currently on the market for the varroa mite. What impact has this medication on the bee? Because you treat usually the beehive. If you spray something, you can't avoid having it on the bee as well. What is the impact?
Yeah, that's like some of those chemical ones. It depends if they are like fat loving or water loving chemicals. Like if they are fat loving, they end up in the pollen, for example. So you have residues in the hive. So you have residues in the hive where the bees are feed on. So they somehow accumulate in the hive. So this can happen. And in the end, it can also end up in the honey, but then it should be more the water solvent one that is ending up in the honey. And this is a problem. And then that the varroa mites can become resistant, which I said already. And then some of the treatments, for example, also those acid treatments, if you treat at the wrong time, for example, a very common treatment is to use formic acid. And this actually all over the world, it's very common. And if you use formic acid, you need to have an environment temperature that is all right. And also the humidity in the colony should be all right. And that it actually works. So if it's too cold, it will not work at all because it will evaporate in the hive, not as much that it's harming the mite. But if it's too hot, it can also harm the bee. So if it's like some of those treatments, if you put them in the hive at the wrong time, you can even kill the whole hive because you kill the queen, for example.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those treatments are, or many times when you treat with formic acid, you cannot find any brood in the colony, for example. So it's also harming the brood.
Yeah. So it's very important to have that knowledge before you start treating and to actually not just do whatever, buy stuff and do it yourself, but actually have an expert helping you out and knowing what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes. But there's a kind of a solution coming up because there's many ways you can help your hive against the mite without any chemical treatment. Like you can, like one thing that is very important to know is that the mite depends on the brood of the honeybee. So the honeybee, like the queen is laying her eggs in those cells and then the little larva is hatching out of the egg and is fed by the other nurse bees. And then there is the time when this larva is fully grown and then they actually sealing those cells. And those mites, they come in to those cells just before they are sealing. So they are sealing those cells. And for the normal worker bee, it's like about 12 days they're in this cell. And inside this, actually the reproduction of the mite happens. So without having a honeybee brood, there is no reproduction of those mites. So a brood break, you can do this by caging your queen, for example. So you have to catch the queen, put it in a little cage in the hive. In those cages, she's still fed by the nurse bees and the other worker bees. So she will survive in this cage, but she's not able to lay eggs. So you have a break where there is no brood in the colony. And this helps already a lot to kill or reduce the population of your mite in a way that is maybe enough already. And then there's also those male bees, the drones, that are produced in spring. And those are also very attractive for the mite to reproduce in those cells, because those cells are actually sealed for a little longer time. So actually more mites can reproduce in those cells. And if you remove those cells, it also helps to kill some of those mites.
Right.
So there are other ways than the chemical one. And those are actually, so it's actually more and more ways you can do this are coming up. And hopefully one day we might be able to not treat with chemicals, but still have a control of those populations.
Yeah, and that's probably also where research and all of that and your work is coming to play and is really important for the future as well. What do you think has been, in your opinion, the number one reason why varroa spread worldwide? How did it spread?
Yeah, the biggest problem is the trade in the world. So there is, like, for example, like a swarm of honeybees can settle down on a tree or something, and on this tree it's looking for a place where it can live. And if it's for accident settling in a container that is going to be shipped somewhere, you can ship colonies without knowing to other places. But an even bigger problem is that there's of course also trade with honeybees. So the trade with the honeybees can easily transmit pathogens from one country to the other country. Yeah. And I think when the varroa mite came from Asia over Europe to the US, it all happened by trade.
Yeah.
And not only this is happening, also a lot of beekeepers are, they want to harvest as much honey as possible. So they move their bees to places where there's a good honey flow. And so this movement is also taking place. So it's the trade and the movement of beekeepers, of the hives, that is moving pathogens around.
Yeah, thank you. You are very international. Your work is really leading you to all kinds of different countries. You're working with a lot of different scientists in all places in the world. And why do you think collaboration internationally with other scientists is so important for the topic of bee health?
Yeah, just because, like I just said, it's like the trade is worldwide going on, so we need to work together worldwide. For example, in the moment, in Europe, there is a new mite coming up. So there's another mite from Asia coming, the Trobilaedops mite. So it already reached the eastern part of Europe. So it was found in Georgia, and it was found very close to the Ukraine in Russia. And there's a lot of rumors going on that it might be somewhere else already, but those are already confirmed. And we need to work together with those countries that are close by where the mite is already, to warn them and to be able to stop or to limit the spread. Otherwise, we could have those mites in a very short time in all Europe. But if we have the knowledge and if we work together with all those countries, we might be able to stop it.
Yeah.
And then many other kind of diseases, it's like on some places it's easier to work or to study bees because you can be isolated. So, and for example, when I talked about those islands where they work with resistant bees, for example, there's...
Yeah.
In any place, it can be something special that is of interest. And so it's very important to work with those people together and those scientists together And also, there's a lot of scientific publications going on, so you can read all those publications, but it's so important to meet the scientist itself. If you're interested in a topic, you can get much more information of the scientist itself than just out of the paper he has written.
Yeah, 100% agree. What do you think have you learned from other scientists internationally? And what do you think you could bring to the table to teach them? Do you have any example?
Difficult. I learned a lot from a lot of different people. I think most important for me is actually to learn to be confident that those things that I'm doing are important, and are important to also for bees all over the world, and to discuss this with others is important. So this I learned, and I learned to be open for new ideas also from other scientists. And what can I bring? I'm an expert on the small hive beetle, for example. So many times I was invited to places where this beetle was introduced new. So it was a new emerging disease for them. And so I can tell them what I know about this beetle, for example. So yeah. This things like this I can do.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome sharing knowledge and working together. I'm a big fan of collaboration anyways, because I think there's not one person that can know it all. But together we have such a big wealth of knowledge, and then we can actually come up with new ideas, bounce off ideas, and I think have more in the end. The result will be just so much better. What has been one of the most interesting places you have been invited to in the world to talk about bees or to work with scientists?
There's so many interesting places, and I'm always interested in seeing something new. And but just recently, actually, the 2024, in the beginning of 2024, I was invited to the island La Réunion, because in 2022 they found a small hive beetle in their country, and so they tried to find an expert to discuss with them and to look at their current situation, to really look at their apiaries, to see what is going on there, and what in my opinion would be the best way to deal with this new beetle. And this was very impressive for me. It was very nice to see this island, which I probably would never have visited without this invitation. But there's many other places. For example, there was the last Apimondia meeting was happening in Santiago de Chile. And this was very nice for me, because I think when you were with me in the lab, we had Constanza from Chile coming to visit us. And so it was a very nice opportunity to see her again. And so there's always other interesting things in all those places. So, But La Réunion, I really enjoyed a lot.
Yeah. That's also really interesting. You brought up that conference. It's happening every year, is that correct?
It's happening every second year.
Every second year.
So it will happen this year, actually, very close by in Copenhagen.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other cool thing, right, of international. Everyone comes together. Those conferences are held in different places of the world, different countries, every second year, and all of you as the specialists and experts and scientists come together to discuss those important matters. And as said in the beginning, especially bees, it's really important for all of us, and it does make a difference to us humans as well. asset for our ecosystem, for the food, for all of those things. And it's so cool to see how really everyone can work together. So that's just another perfect example why it's good to have an open mind, to travel, to see different places. And it's very interesting. And I told you probably before, and I talk about it sometimes, but your travel stories also motivated me to go and live abroad. And I know you weren't the happiest when I told you that you were one of the reasons why I leave you and resign from my job. But it's actually really inspiring to hear those stories and to hear about scientific research and that you did your studies in South Africa, because this is something so inspiring and exciting. And I think it's just making the world like a smaller place, because the more you travel, the smaller the world feels like and the more connected you are with people. So I love that you bring it still together in your job and you have the opportunity to actually combine your science and traveling in one job. So you pretty much have achieved what you were looking for when you first started studying biology.
Yeah, so. No, somehow it happened like this, yeah. And I'm very happy that it's like this. And those conferences are really, really nice, because like there is like regional ones and then there's international ones. But there is like this community of bee scientists. And of course you make friends with not all of them, but with many of them. And it's so nice to meet them again and again in, on different places in the world, even if it's just for short time, because of course I cannot combine all those travels with holiday or vacation or something. Yeah. I also have a family which I don't want to leave for too long. So yeah. This also changed my life a lot to have like a family. Otherwise, yeah. I would probably travel much more. Yeah. But no, I really enjoy to meet the people again and again. This is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the part I enjoy a lot as well. And who knows, maybe one day I work with bees again. I kind of see myself sometimes at least partially being involved again, because it's just a really interesting topic. That's for sure. What do you think every individual like you and I, the person next door, or communities could do to help a little bit at least with bee health and helping the bee have a better life?
Yeah, I think in general, it's having more interest in nature, like, and because like I said in the beginning, the biggest problem is that all those habitats of animals are getting smaller and smaller worldwide. So to fight against maybe the taking over of some special habitats when it's already known that there's an animal that it's has only a limited space already, and then some industry want to take this place, that you can fight against it. This is something. And then fight for environmental health in general. And if you want to do something for bees, it's just like plant some flowers that are helping bees to feed on, and also other pollinators to feed on. And think about if you cut a tree or if you cut your grass, and
yeah,
just give them some more space.
Yeah, that's such a good advice, and also a very good ending of a very interesting episode. And I'm really grateful, because my heart is full. I really enjoy talking about the bees, because yeah, it's just, as said multiple times now, such an interesting topic. And I'm hoping that people are more aware of it as well, and that just in general understand the importance of it. So maybe with this episode, they might be rethinking a few things they do or how they could help possibly. And thank you a lot for your time and to share your knowledge with us today and to bring to light a little bit what's going on in the bee world. So thank you so much, Mark, for being here today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you. It is always. thanks a lot.
Thank you. And I hope everyone who watches or listens to this can learn something from it today, especially. And I hope I see you next time. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.